technology is pervasive in our everyday lives now in a way that it never was before. So I think the way that we have to approach technology as teachers is not so much how can the technology benefit us or even how can it benefit our students, but how do we help students use technology for their own musical enrichment?
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Welcome to episode 84 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and a special welcome to all my Inner Circle members around the world. Thanks to everyone for tuning in today, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. Great to have you. Great to have me in your earbuds, I think is how I should say it. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the teacher behind the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the piano teaching blog at timtopham.com, and the Inner Circle community. My passion is supporting creative piano teaching through the sharing of innovative ideas, supporting teachers as they try new things, and ultimately to help you provide the richest, most exciting, and fun learning experiences possible for your students. Today's show notes and a full transcript is available at timtopham.com/episode84. And I'm very excited to say that we've got a fantastic freebie today. This is really relevant to what we're going to be talking about in today's show, which is all about how you can modernize and upgrade and make your recitals that little bit more interesting and interactive with a little help from technology. So today's freebie, I'm very thankful for the Time Warp crew, and we're going to talk about them in a moment. They've put together a comprehensive how to connect MIDI to iOS. So that's Apple devices guide. So it's got images. It's recently been updated with how to connect Bluetooth MIDI and all that kind of great stuff. So if you're interested in that freebie, it's a cheat sheet, really easy to consume, but a really handy guide if you've never done that before. Head to timtopham.com/episode84. Okay, my guest today is an independent piano teacher, technology consultant, and arts advocate from Denver, Colorado. I'm very excited that we'll be hanging out, hopefully, when I come to Denver to hang out with Bradley and Leela at the 88 Creative Keys workshops at the end of July. So that was very cool to find out that she comes from Denver. She works with industry leaders such as Yamaha and Time Warp to keep music education relevant in the 21st century. And many of you will have met her at conferences at various booths. She grew up on a farm in Tennessee, and she actually used to work at a museum. And like me, loves cycling, which is kind of cool. So Shana Kirk, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much, Tim. It's great to be here.
What on earth did you do at the museum?
Well, actually, it was a lucky connection from some of my students at the time whose parents also worked at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, which is a wonderful place if you ever get a chance to visit. They were bringing in a traveling exhibit called What Makes Music, and they needed some content specialists to come and help design the Discovery Center and coordinate visitor experience, mostly the hands-on activities. So I designed a few activities where visitors could come through and explore what it means to play a piano, what it means to create sound on a keyboard. I helped with some of the shows that go on the little stages in museums. It was really probably the most fun job I've ever had.
Sounds good. So that should go on my list of places to visit when I'm in Denver, should it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a fantastic place. The music exhibit is no longer there. That was a traveling exhibit that was just there for a few months. But my relationship with the museum stayed for a little while, and I continued for a little bit after that. And then I went back to piano teaching. So I missed it.
That's great. Well, look, you're not at the museum and that kind of work anymore. What are you doing? What kind of work do you do in music education at the moment?
So I am officially, I'm an independent consultant, but I have longstanding relationships with Yamaha, especially, and Time Warp Technologies. So a big manufacturer and a small software company. And then a handful of relationships, you know, throughout our community of music educators, in which I just sort of wear a lot of hats and do a lot of projects that involve helping people get up to speed in whatever technology helps them in music teaching.
And that's why we see you at conferences, because a company will say, well, Shana is the person who's just knows how to connect piano teachers with this software and show them how it works. So let's bring her along. Is that kind of how it works?
That's kind of a, that's quite a lot of it. Yeah, right. I do quite a lot of workshops for teachers and training for teachers. And, you know, I was myself a piano teacher for a very long time. We could say I'm sort of on sabbatical from that at the moment. But I came from a background of being sort of a geek from the time I was, I don't know, in middle school. And that never left my system. And so discovering early on in my piano teaching career that I could really put both of these two kind of niches together, it was really a light bulb moment for me early in my piano teaching time. I actually taught at a little school that was really near where Leela lives now, but the school's no longer there, but it was just a little music school. So I had the opportunity to have groups sometimes in a time when that wasn't all that common. So I put together a little music camp in the summer that had, you know, several keyboards and MIDI accompaniments, which were quite a novel thing at the time. And so that all sort of converged at the same time with, I was a graduate student at the University of Denver, which also had a strong emphasis on technology and sort of a progressive ideas about preparing students. So I had a great opportunity to be exposed to a lot of technology. I got to meet some real pioneers and develop some mentorships, most notably George Litters from Time Warp, and I met through our Yamaha connections. And then Paul Cheftel became one of my great mentors early on in that school experience, just because I had met him at a conference. And he sort of took me under his wing and brought me into this, you know, whole new world of teaching with this MIDI technology.
So what do you see as the role of technology in music education?
Oh, goodness, it's gone in so many different directions. You know, it used to be sort of a niche of people that felt like we needed to use technology for a specific way to reach out to the students or, you know, meet them on their own level. And I still feel like that's somewhat the case. But technology is pervasive in our everyday lives now in a way that it never was before. So I think the way that we have to approach technology as teachers is not so much how can the technology benefit us or even how can it benefit our students, but how do we help students use technology for their own musical enrichment? And then seeing all the many ways that music at the center, you know, the true pedagogy of music pervades our lives and helping students see how that they can use their music knowledge to go in so many different directions, whether it's video or whether it's live music or whether it's gaming music or so many different directions students can take these days. And I think it's our job as teachers to make sure they have really all the directions possible.
Mm. And I think when it comes to a discussion about technology, we can see it in maybe three areas as teachers running our own studios. There's a fair bit of technology that we can use ourselves in our own businesses to automate procedure, to streamline processes, to increase productivity. So there's that kind of side of technology. There's the technology we can use to teach students and actually enhance our pedagogy. And then there's the technologies that we're going to talk about today, which will have some crossover with the teaching, but technologies that we can use when we're presenting students and works in a performance and a recital kind of situation. And would you agree that that's kind of a reasonable overview? Have I missed any areas of technology use for teachers?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that does pretty much envelop everything, every possibility. You know, of course, there are so many little spider legs that you can branch out in. But yeah, I think teachers might have felt like technology was reserved at some point for, you know, only really geeky people or only music business people. And I think now we can really see that, first of all, the technology has become so much more approachable. And then we can really make our own lives easier and more efficient and help our students in a very meaningful way.
Mm. Okay, so this month's focus is all about exploring exams, recitals, and performing. And so I wanted to get you on to talk about creative ways that we can actually use technology, particularly in recitals. Because as we all know, we've all been to those recitals. In fact, I can put my hand up and say the first recitals I ran were pretty basic. They had a piano on a stage. Kids would get up. they would need to look right and they would play their piece and you'd clap at the right time, etc. And I look back and cringe a little bit. I mean, there's always going to be a place for those styles of a traditional classical recital. But what I did last year was I introduced a pop piano recital, so we had a band. And there's just so many great things that we can do that doesn't have to either break the bank or make things expensive or hard to do, but will really increase the experience for everyone in the audience, I think, and the students themselves. So let's start talking about them. We'll get straight into it. You've put together 7 tech ideas for recitals. So can we go straight into those and start with number one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you really hit on something when you mentioned engaging the audience a second ago. And so I think anything that helps engage the audience is so beneficial. And if you think about anything that you go to, just, you know, what in whatever circumstance, you know, whether it's a pop concert or whether it's, you know, something in a school, it's very uncommon these days to not have a visual element. So that was a lot of negatives, I guess. It's very common to have a visual element, almost to the point that I think audiences expect it. Yes. And not to make too much of a commentary on 21st century lives, but people are distracted in ways that they weren't before. So anything that you can do to help engage the audience is so helpful. And parents so much appreciate having a visual element. So I think my numero uno, I mean, I guess we can kind of start with the big one. And I should have worked up to this maybe. It's just a visual element. And it can be images, it can be abstract art, it can be anything. But there are a couple of really, really easy ways to get started. One of my favorite tech tools to accomplish this is a free app. It is actually made by Yamaha called Visual Performer. But now comes the really cool part that hasn't been available for so long. Visual Performer is a free app for iPad, and it creates abstract images based on the music that is being fed to it. That music can be fed to it via MIDI from any digital piano, or even it could be an acoustic piano that has a MIDI output, such as a Disclavier or a silent piano. So whatever is being played on the keyboard is literally creating a visual effects show. And you can choose a few different themes. They have, you know, extra ones you can download. None of them are terribly complicated or even sophisticated, but they just add this element of grandeur to what might otherwise be, you know, pretty unfamiliar music to the audience. So all of a sudden your eyes have something to follow that is actually meaningful in the context of the music. So I love that a lot. And I especially love that now you can do everything wirelessly. So you can have your keyboard or your digital piano connected with a Bluetooth MIDI adapter. And then you could have your iPad tossed up to an Apple TV device so that with absolutely no wires on the stage, you're showing up on, you know, a large monitor or projector or something, a beautiful light show that looks like it's made by a professional AV designer when it's really just a free app.
Brilliant.
So some of that, of course, takes a little setup and practice. I wouldn't go in and do it without ever having set it up before, but it's so much fun. Even when I take this into work with colleges, which I do quite a bit of, even when I take it into, you know, conservatory level students, they have such a good time watching their music turn into images.
I bet. And imagine that for a child as well. It would be amazing, I would have thought. In fact, you would have to make sure that they didn't get distracted by it while they were playing, probably.
They do like to watch themselves, and it has a camera setting, so you can make it reflect the person who is in front of the piano too.
Right, okay.
The device's camera at something. That's a possibility.
Interestingly, I went to see Ludovico Einaudi. Are you familiar with his work? Film composer?
Oh, yeah.
So piano-based film composer. He played here in Melbourne, and he had a number of so he was center stage facing the back, which is kind of unusual, and then he had instruments around him. But up on the screen, massive, huge projection of exactly what you're talking about, abstract imagery that, in fact, I didn't even see it necessarily move in time to beats or anything. I don't know if that's what this app does. It was kind of just free-flowing. But, again, it gave people some other thing to focus on. and be absorbed by.
Right, and sometimes, especially if we're having students play music that's not completely familiar to the audience, maybe not even familiar to the other students, it's so great to have that extra element of just, you know, something to help bring them into the space. I think it's so very helpful. I will say, several years ago, both George Litterst and I have assisted in multimedia concerts in which, you know, great artists, there's Angeline Chang, who's a Grammy winner, has done wonderful multimedia concerts in Cleveland, where she is based, where she's collaborated with an AV designer, you know, an actual visual artist. And the effort that went into those projects and the time it took and the money that was spent, it's mind-blowing. And the results were mind-blowing too. I mean, she had some amazing concerts and events where she literally was collaborating with an artist. And so that's another thing that I would encourage as the next step, is to get students to collaborate with visual artists who are maybe also students, or, you know, tell a story with your music. I did a wonderful project that ended up on display at the Denver Art Museum several years ago. I worked together with another piano teacher, and then we collaborated with a visual arts after school program to illustrate the story of Babar. So this is a great, you know, classic story that's just dramatic and scary in some places. And our purpose was ultimately self-serving. We weren't able to get permission from the French publisher to show the images from the storybook in time for the concert. So it was to be an interactive concert that had images of the story, along with, I was the narrator and my colleague was playing the piano part from Poulenc. So we got together with this after-school arts organization, and each little cluster of kids in an after-school program was assigned a part of the story to illustrate. Some of them worked through sculpture, some of them did paintings. The range was enormous. Some of them were 3 years old and some of them were, you know, 17 years old. So it was this varied and wonderfully colorful, crazy illustration. So the students learned the story thoroughly and had their own sort of take on the emotions in the story and the action in the story. And then we just put it together as like a PowerPoint. Mm. And so their images and sculptures and photographs of their sculptures, I guess, became the illustrations of the story of Babar. And it was such a wonderful thing. And then the actual items, the actual art projects were auctioned off later as a fundraiser for the after-school arts program.
Oh,
so, you know, that was one example of some amazing collaborations. And, you know, those don't come together easily, but it was so gratifying and worthwhile.
Mm. Just on tactic number one, which was connecting up the visuals, you mentioned MIDI and Bluetooth. So just remind everyone, if that is a little bit, if we're a bit unsure about that, then that cheat sheet download, we've got the connecting MIDI to Bluetooth to iOS devices is what you need to grab. So that's on the show notes page.
Oh, exactly.
All right. So did we already cover number two? Was that, or are we on to number two now?
Well, yeah. So adding visuals, that's a really giant number one.
Mm.
But number two is not that. Number two is incorporating digital accompaniment.
Right.
So.
Right.
We have so many beginning students sometimes whose pieces don't necessarily sound all that gratifying either to them or to the audience. So it's really helpful and I think really satisfying for students to sound like they're something, they're either a little more advanced than they are or even just that they're part of something bigger than they are. So we have so many great opportunities to incorporate digital accompaniments. You know, for probably almost 30 years now, digital pianos have had the possibility of playing accompaniment tracks. They sounded pretty hokey back in the early days, but some of them sound really fantastic now. And getting back to the idea of incorporating the iPad, we have apps like Home Concert Extreme, which is from Time Warp, but also Synthesia, which is just a completely graphic, non-score-based accompaniment program. And everybody, of course, knows about Piano Maestro. So there are so many ways that you can just run those accompaniments off of an iPad and either make them interactive with a digital piano or if you don't have a digital piano on the stage or a disc clavier or something like that, they can all run by themselves without necessarily having the full interactivity of MIDI. And it can still be a very rewarding experience for both the player and the audience.
And I would say that one thing you must do whenever you're trying to get a sound output from a device is use a sound system of some sort.
Oh, no doubt. Right. The iPad will never have. The iPad Pro has a fairly decent sound if you're the only one listening to it. But if you're playing for an audience, definitely a sound system is important. I would put this word of caution, if your sound system is Bluetooth, to really test that thoroughly. Bluetooth is subject to not being quite as reliable in a room full of people that have cell phones.
Right. Okay. That's a good tip. Yeah. Right. Hardwire.
In a performance situation where, even microscopic differences in timing or something might be more obvious, I would veer to safety and say wire in the sound system if possible.
Mm, yeah. And I've used NoteStar. I've told people about. Did you mention NoteStar before? Yeah.
Right.
NoteStar
going on the sort of other side of digital because it is audio based, and which is also so much fun because you can play along with an actual singer, you know.
And that's always the missing link in students playing pop music, is that if they're not playing the melody, and I discourage kids from playing the melody, you want them to sing it or at least play along with a singer.
As a child, that was one of the most frustrating things for me, was going to the music store, which, you know, was at the mall, of course. It was like the mall music store where you would go and pick up all of your favorite, you know, Phil Collins or Journey or whatever. and the piano part was never what you expected it to be.
Yes, absolutely. So it's great. And as you say, very, very clever what you can do with some pretty simple apps these days that are very cheap or free or just have a one-off cost. Have you ever seen Piano Maestro used in a performance situation? I know it's a great practice tool.
I have seen it used just one time that I can think of in a performance situation. The way that it's set up more game style with little awards at the end and whatever makes it a little less ideal, I guess, for that situation. But I have seen it at least once or twice. It's probably more effective in the earlier levels.
I agree.
In that way.
Mm, brilliant. Okay, so that was number two. So we've covered visuals, adding visuals to your recital, using digital accompaniments. What's number three?
Okay, so this one is almost like 2.5, but I made it its own category because it's so complicated, a little more complicated, I should say.
Don't scare everyone off.
It's really scary and hard. It involves more steps, which is for your advanced students, letting them play with a virtual orchestra.
Okay, you better tell us what that means.
Yeah, okay. So it could mean a lot of different things. For very advanced students, a student could actually go into, a sequencing program like a Digital Performer or Cubase and actually create an orchestra of a concerto. It would be the same experience as, the old Music Minus One recordings that we used to play along with. But we've worked with a few different entities to create an experience that is really rewarding, I think, for especially early level concerto players who may not have an opportunity to play with a real orchestra, a live orchestra, I should say. So here's the setup that we've done. We put Home Concert Extreme.
So that's
sort of on the player. That's an app. And it's, in this case, I would recommend it to be used in the computer software version. Okay. And you'll see why in a minute. So there's a computer software version, Mac or PC, of Home Concert Extreme. A company called Stellar Piano, which is owned by our colleague Stella Sick, has come up with a lot of concertos that are designed to be used with Home Concert Extreme. The limit you might expect is the built-in MIDI sounds for real orchestral instruments.
Yeah.
You know, string bowings are never quite what you expect them to be. So if you're really looking for an authentic sound, sometimes it's hard to get that out of MIDI if you're playing known repertoire. So we brought in a third element, which is the Garratton Personal Orchestra, which is something that's made by Make Music, the same creators of Finale. So Garratton Personal Orchestra is kind of a sweet spot of not being a terribly expensive product. I think it's about $150 or $200 now. And it can create very detailed orchestral sounds right down to bowings and, you know, different types of horn techniques and just very, very detailed orchestral sounds, but without costing the same as some of the things that are used commercially, like say Vienna Instruments. So by putting these things together, Home Concert Extreme, the Stellar Piano Library, and Gariton Personal Orchestra, you can actually have this full orchestral experience where the piano is conducting the orchestra. And it sounds fantastic, and it's so rewarding, and such a great way to prepare if you have a student who's getting ready to play with an actual orchestra too. So we have actually helped put together a few times events where, you know, maybe a school was in a small place or the school was a small school that didn't have an orchestra, and the piano students all had an opportunity to have a concerto recital with an orchestra. And I think you're, I think you've worked with Mario and Neo Ahero before. They've, you know, they've just blown this up. They play with the Gariton-based Stellar MIDI Library concerti all the time.
Have you got an example of that on YouTube that we can pop in the show notes?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great.
Definitely, there are the sort of early level Haydn divertimenti that are taught very frequently as first concerti. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we have an example of that, but one way or another, I'll make sure you have a video.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. So it sounds like it's a little bit more complex, but it's not out of the realm of people following a plan step by step.
It's not out of the realm. And so Stella sells these concerti through the Time Warp website, even though she created all of them herself. Mm. And she has created very detailed setup instructions.
Great.
So even though it is a fairly complex setup, you have a checklist.
Fantastic. And so, you mentioned that the piano conducts the orchestra. I assume that means that the backing track doesn't just keep on playing. It will actually follow the performer, which is vital.
Right. Obviously. It's actually following the performer right down to even some special markers where at one point you can tell the orchestra to go back to a tempo, or the orchestra can be set to follow your rubato. Or, you know, there are a lot of different settings possible.
Mm. And that I can't imagine the programming that's gone into something like that. But I remember when Home Concert Extreme first came out and I tested it, it is incredibly clever at following you. It's remarkable.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So that's the backbone, the fact that you can use Home Concert Extreme to have the digital accompaniments follow you. But then the full experience comes from having the concerto, you know, created in a very detailed way so that, you know, the score is fairly representative. It's still MIDI based. And then the output of the MIDI is Gariton, which sounds fantastic.
Got it. And is the Gariton loaded on the same device as the Home Concert Extreme? Are they all in the
computer? It can be. You know, that's a great question, because back when we were just experimenting with this, it couldn't be. There were no computers, or it wasn't common to have computers that were really powerful enough to run both at the same time. But that is completely within, you know, reasonable possibility now. If you're using a PC instead of a Mac, you do have to put on some kind of virtual MIDI interface that connects one app to the other app within your computer.
Right. Okay.
Mac has that as a built-in.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Okay. So we've gone from visuals to accompaniments to serious accompaniments. Okay. Let's move to step four. What's your tech tip number four?
Okay. Tech tip number four is, the title comes from actually an old Paul Scheftel book. It was called Duet Yourself.
Right.
Duet Yourself.
Duet. So D-U-E-T.
Very ridiculously old days. And the cover of this book, I'll try and get you a picture of it. The cover of this book had a tape recorder on it.
Oh, okay.
And it was a little collection of pieces in which there was a sort of a primo part and a secondo part that were facing each other on opposite pages. And they could either one be played as a separate piece, but then you were supposed to have a tape recorder and record yourself playing one of them and then use the other one as a duet with yourself.
Got it.
So this is how long ago Paul Scheftel has been thinking up these ideas of sort of more enriching accompaniments for early level piano students. So that was probably, oh gosh, I have no idea from what year, but whenever people were using tape recorders routinely. But so now we don't, that book is, by the way, very clever. I don't know. I don't think it's still in print, but you can do so much with MIDI technology to create the same effect. And in fact, one of my favorite events ever was Mario Ajero, I'll mention again, used a disc clavier at his school, Stephen F. Austin in Texas, to play the March Militaire duet with himself. And he used the disc clavier's video sync technology, meaning that he created a video that included the piano's performance data in the video. So there was a big screen with him playing a previously recorded part of the duet. And then he came on stage and played the other part on the piano with the keys moving and his video making the keys move for the other part.
Oh my.
And then
goodness.
To make it even more clever, you'll have to see it in the middle, they switch parts.
Oh wow.
So there's a little slapstick involved. But kids so much love that, you know, the humor of it and the cleverness of it. But I would also say, you know, sometimes they might have relatives or friends who live in other places. You could record a MIDI-based recording. And it's so rewarding if it's on a disc clavier, you know, something that has moving keys, but it wouldn't have to be. You could do it definitely on a clavinova or some kind of digital piano where either the student, him or herself, was actually playing the other duet part, or someone from somewhere else was playing the other duet part. So maybe, you know, grandpa in another state played the duet part.
Okay.
So duet yourself.
So the technology required for that is internet MIDI? Is that how you connect to instruments?
No. I'm not talking about doing this as that's number five, so you can't give that away yet.
Oh, right. Sorry.
The technology required would just be any instrument that records.
Okay, got it. So the idea was
signed up as something to do with an audio recording, but since we all, you know, lots of us anyway, have instruments that record, you can have an authentic experience by recording one of the duet parts ahead of time and then play back with it.
Yeah, so we could say, hey, okay, so Jack's up next on the stage and he's actually going to be accompanying himself playing this duet.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or, you know, sometimes if you don't have a big studio or your studio is focused on, you know, one age group or another, you might not have enough students to play at the same level with each other.
Yes, cool. Oh, good, I like it. That's nice and simple. That's something that any of us could do really, really easily.
Right, absolutely. Adding the video element is a little more complex, but disc clavier even has an app now that's called My Music Recorder that lets you make the video synchronized recording over an app and wirelessly.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't require a huge, huge technology, but it's basically the same technology that's used in the piano e-competition, which has been going for, you know, many, many years. So yeah. It's not new technology by any means.
Great. And we'll try and find that video. Was it Mario doing that?
Yeah, Mario and the March Militaire do
great,
it. Yes.
Great.
Very, very funny.
If people haven't listened, we had a podcast not long ago. It was last year when we focused on online teaching, and Mario came on and finished the month, I think, with some higher tech online teaching ideas. And he talked about a few of these in that. So we'll pop a link to that podcast in the show notes as well.
Oh, super good.
Okay, number five.
So number five is, this is a great segue, is bringing in a long-distance guest artist.
Right.
Either with internet MIDI, I think most people would probably use the internet MIDI software, or disc claviers actually have their own built-in remote lesson software if you happen to have disc clavier at each end. That's a possibility for, you know, mostly that's something that's used at colleges. You could actually invite a long distance guest. And George and I actually did that once, where we popped into a recital that was happening in New York. Mm-hmm. And it was at Paul Scheftel's little sort of salon. Then he played something on our concert. It was at a school in Iowa. So that was so much fun. It used to be really hard to do that. We used to sort of have to plug together a lot of different technologies to really make it work, right? And now it's really quite easy. And the best part is, you know, internet is fast. It used to be very frustrating to worry about, is the internet itself going to hold up for us? But the internet in most places is very reliable. So we can bring in performers, or as I assisted with a student in Memphis recently, the student was a long distance student of the teacher and brought in for the studio recital.
Nice. That's great. So what kind of, without going into too much detail, if you don't have disc claviers, how do you do this?
So any digital piano can use the Internet MIDI software.
Right. So Internet MIDI is a software program that you download to a computer to allow your digital piano to talk MIDI over the internet.
Exactly.
Okay.
So then you would reach out like we connect over Skype with your buddy on the other end. And then whatever they play is then transmitted to your local digital piano. And if it happens to be something that has moving keys, then you see the moving keys. But if not, it's still such an authentic experience because you're not limited to the audio restrictions of, say, a Skype or a video conferencing program, which is usually fairly compressed just for the purpose of saving bandwidth. And so it's a really, really great experience.
It's in time as well, right? You don't have delays.
Also, Internet MIDI includes, and in fact, Remote Lesson does too, adjustments so that you can change the delay to match the video. So remember, MIDI is a very, very small amount of data. Mm-hmm. It's just information about the music. We're not talking about capturing full audio here. So when you're transmitting MIDI, it can go almost instantly. In fact, there were some Italian researchers a few years ago who were transmitting MIDI down in the single digits, single milliseconds, which is remarkable. I mean, yeah, an 8-millisecond delay is, you know, somebody across the room from you. But if you're incorporating video, I would bet you, you and I talking across, you know, several continents right now, we probably have about a 350 millisecond delay happening. Right. So you'd want to adjust your piano's connection so it would match. And so there's a slider to make that happen.
That doesn't sound too hard at all.
It's not too hard.
Yeah, brilliant. And you don't have to add video of the person remotely. You could do, but
right. And just play, fact, right? I worked with a teacher who was amazing stories of people that I've worked with now that I think about it. But several years ago, there was a teacher who wanted to continue teaching a student who had gone in the civilian corps to work with her family in Africa. And the village was tiny and didn't have really full-time electricity even, but it was very sweet. The single line of electricity and the single line of the internet were reserved on piano lesson day just for the piano lessons. Mm. The whole village gave over all of their internet and all of their electricity for the time of the piano lessons. And then other village kids started taking piano lessons too. It was very sweet. So in a case like that, where the internet was limited, sometimes they wouldn't use very much video. Sometimes they would even just text to each other. Mm. And in the case of a recital, if you weren't using video, you know, you could incorporate one of our earlier multimedia ideas and have images on display for the student who's playing, and that might be quite interesting too.
Yeah, totally. Oh, that's great. Really, really good ideas. Okay, so let's go on to number 6 now.
Okay, so number 6 is a little bit of a twist on public recital, because I think it's an important tool for students to gather skills to create online performance. Mm-hmm. So student-led video projects. And these are things that could be played on a live recital, but also give the students a portfolio of something that they can say, oh, they did this project themselves. So along the lines, I guess, of the Babar the Elephant story, but maybe not that complicated, there are some really easy online tools now where you can just drop audio, video, images, graphics into a timeline and create a nice narrative that includes music. And this is where I was sort of getting to earlier, thinking how important it is for students to understand that the piano lessons they're taking today might be useful in so many different ways that we're not even really conceiving in the space of a piano lesson. I mean, we just don't have time for everything. But being able to see music as part of this complexity of, enriching lives So one of my favorite tools of those, and I actually learned about this watching middle schoolers prepare multimedia projects for, you know, history class, is called WeVideo. And so it's just an online tool and it's very, very easy to use. There are a couple of other ones that I would have to research to come up with their names. But WeVideo is just an online tool. So you don't have to download anything. You work completely on a browser. I also really like Adobe's Spark Video, which is even easier, but that's an iPad app. So Two different sort of directions you can take. And you don't get unlimited options in, you know, design or lengths of you know, clips or whatever. But I think putting those parameters in place for students is very helpful. Just, you know, it's sort of like improvising. You don't want to say to a student, just get on the piano and play something. You know, you want them to have parameters. So I think these sort of beginner level video creation tools are so useful. And then the next step from that might be something like a Camtasia or a ScreenFlow, which is, you know, which is a paid software, but it's not a professional, you know, it's not expensive, like say Final Cut. I think it's maybe $100 or $200 also. So it's just some fantastic tools to get people thinking of music as part of a larger context.
I love that this is, you've mentioned this in a month when we're talking about not just performing, but exams too, because one of the advantages of doing exams or competitions is that students are working really hard towards a very set goal. And if you take that goal away, what could replace it? Well, how about a student-led recital project where they're creating timeline or something online or on YouTube that demonstrates their work?
Yeah, and it can be with the music at the center, or it could be with something else at the center. You know, it could be a documentary project, or it could be a fiction project, or it could be an animation project. And it's so beautiful to see students come together and know that they may not be a great artist, they may not draw with great skill, but maybe they could get together with a friend who does and do these collaborative projects. I really, really love to see those things happen.
Brilliant ideas. Loving this conversation. I think we're up to number 7. Let's finish off with the big one.
Okay. Well, okay. So this kind of I don't know.
I've just built it up. I don't even know what it is.
So this is actually something that I've only seen, you know, and I didn't even see firsthand, but I've only known about happening once, but I thought it was such a brilliant idea, I had to include it, which is have students provide music for silent films.
Oh, cool.
So there is an amazing treasure of public domain silent films, many of which are comedies that are short, you know, maybe 5 or 7 minutes each. You can find them in the National Archives. I know this is an international podcast, but the U.S. Library of Congress has things like that. There are websites that are just for sort of film enthusiasts, and I'll give you a little set of those.
Yeah, let's give the links in the show notes.
But just fantastic videos that are in the public domain because they were made so long ago. And then actually a handful of others that are in the public domain because their creators, they bungled the registration for copyright somehow. Yeah. You know, I can't remember which one. There's a horror film from the 60s that it might be Night of the Living Dead. I think we could look at
that. Maybe not that one.
So that might be something for older students, but not necessarily in front of your 6-year-old. but yeah, find some public domain films that exist. And then the sort of deeper thinking and the just complexity that goes into the student, first of all, watching a silent film and deciding what music fits it, or watching what happens when you apply different kinds of music to it and seeing how all of a sudden the viewer is experiencing something completely different based on what music is being played in the background. And I saw this idea once with a film school project where the film school students, I'm sure it's a very common thing that film school students are asked to do, which is choose, you know, 5 or 6 different clips to some pretty boring looking video. So the one that I saw was just a man running up a set of stairs. Mm-hmm. And depending on what the music which music had been applied. Then later an audience was asked, what do you think is happening? So in one case, the music was, oh, he's going to somebody's party. Like, it's really exciting. He can't wait to get there. In another is that he's running from a fire. In another one, it's he's really angry and he's about to go beat somebody up. And all of this just coming from a really boring video of a guy running up the stairs.
The power of the soundtrack is...
The power of the soundtrack.
Yeah, what you've just given us then is an idea for a whole term's worth of work or more with a teenage student who wants to do some composing. What cool ideas. I love it.
I know, absolutely. Well, the teacher I know who has done this is Penny Lazarus, who I think lives in Massachusetts in the US. And she actually had a little old renovated movie theater in her little town. So for this event, they would actually rent out the theater. And the kids would play with, you know, even a big screen, you know, curtains and the whole thing.
Brilliant. I really love it. Thank you so much for that. That idea alone has just got me thinking creatively about so many options. And I hope that that everyone who's listening has got a lot from this. Let's just do a quick summary. So number one was just adding a visual component to your recital. And really any of us can do that with a projector and a free app. I mean, even if you don't use a free app, I performed some time ago now and I played that piece from Amelie. Do you know this one?
Oh, sure.
Do you know that piece? And I found a cartoon online about it on YouTube, and it was it kind of put it into this incredibly tragic, sad war story of a wife who loses her husband at war, and it was just so great. And so I projected that up while I played it, and everyone was emotional, and yeah, you know, it was great. But that again needed no technology. I didn't pay anything. It was just adding a little bit of a visual component,
just a little bit. I meant to mention earlier when we were talking about that, there's a fabulous pianist named Nadezhda Valeva. So I would have to spell that probably before I now give you the right spelling of her name. But she has done a really clever project. In fact, she performed it at one of the conferences in recent years in the US. And I don't remember right now which one it was, where she worked with a video designer. I mean, she worked with the creator of a short film. Mm-hmm. And the short film was somewhat biographical, about a little girl who's taking piano lessons, and she's always got this little sort of stuffed animal by her side, and the stuffed animal kind of becomes a character. It's a beautiful line drawn cartoon-like video. And then at the end of the video, it sort of melds into the real performance, and she actually comes on stage and plays the piece that is, is telling her story. Just one example of a way that the multimedia was taken to a really extreme level with, you know, professional filmmakers, but then blended into a completely fresh and very different concert experience for the audience, who was probably expecting a very staid classical performance by an Eastern European, you know, pianist with a difficult to pronounce last name. And then they get this very refreshing experience of this video actually sort of blending and turning itself into a live performance, and how that really informs the piece and how it really informs how the audience is able to see into the playing itself. It was really, it was quite an observation for me.
So step two we had, or suggestion two, was about adding audio accompaniments, software like NoteStar, Piano Maestro and others. Step three, or idea number three, was actually using virtual orchestra accompaniments. So particularly for students using or playing concerto repertoire, that they can actually have a full orchestra with them that sounds amazing and follows what they do. So that was idea number three. Tech idea number four was duet yourself, with the simple idea of getting students to record two parts of one composition and play the other part live. Correct me if I'm getting any of these wrong, by the way. Number five was having a remote guest join your recital connected by something like Internet MIDI. Idea number six was the student-led recital project. And I love this idea either as something that could be shown and explored during a recital, or something that could just go on at any stage during a student's learning with you as a great way of completing an assessment project or a period of work. And the last one we had was this fantastically creative idea of creating music for silent films. And I'm going to do some more work on this and do some more exploring, because you've really got my brain thinking. Thank you. Thank you so much. Great work for that. Now, a number of these ideas will require some technical knowledge. We know that. Remember that we are giving away a free download today. It's the How to Connect MIDI to an iOS device. So that's an Apple device. Showing you step by step, including how to connect Bluetooth. So if you're interested in that, or you'd like to check out any of these links, we're going to be adding a whole lot of videos that Shana's going to send to me. I've made some notes about those. And if you'd like a transcript, then they're all available at timtopham.com/episode84. Now, where could people find out more about you and what you're doing, apart from catching up with you at a conference?
Well, that's a great place. Come to all the conferences. They're all fun. I right now am doing quite a lot of writing for the Disclavier Education Network website. So that's yamahaden.com. I also have my own website, which needs some considerable updating, but that's pianotopia.net. And now that I've said it on a public
forum, don't go there.
Right now,
I did some research on you and I found that, and I thought, oh, I think that's been had a look at for a little while, but that's no. Okay, because you're doing a whole lot of other fantastic things for people. So, what is Yamaha Den? Is that right?
YamahaDen.com is the Disclavier Education Network, and that's a place where I help Yamaha in coordinating mostly all of the college level. Disclavier users that we have out there, but really any educational Disclavier users. And so we just use that as a place to share news and best practices and resources that many of which are applicable to non-Disclavier users as well, just general music technology. But we use it as a place to sort of connect all of our education and institutional users.
Fantastic. Shana, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look
forward, Thank you so much for inviting me.
That's all right. I look forward to seeing you at NCKP. You'll be definitely hanging out with probably the Time Warp crew, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. And Yamaha 2. And I'm on the technology track committee. And we have some very, very exciting things in the plans. I am happy to share. I don't know how much of the schedule is listed yet, but we have already been working quite a lot on that. So yeah, I'll be very much looking forward to seeing everybody in Chicago.
Right, and a great opportunity to find out more about these kind of ideas that Shana's been talking about, and obviously ask her questions. You give everyone so much time at these stalls. No question is too hard to demonstrate. So you're a great resource. Thank you very much for all that you do for music education around the world. It's a great help.
My pleasure, Tim. Thank you so much. And it's been great visiting today.
All right, we'll speak to you again soon. See you later.
All right, thanks.
So don't forget that freebie again at timtopham.com/episode84. And the full show notes, transcript, all that kind of great stuff is available at that link. And as a final reminder, if you do get a chance, I always love seeing and hearing about reviews if you're enjoying these shows, which I do hope you are. And a great place to do that is actually on my Facebook page. So we'll pop a link in the show notes. If you could leave a review there about the kinds of things that you've been learning from these shows, that would be fantastic. You can also leave a review on iTunes, and the instructions for that are at timtopham.com/iTunes. All right, everyone, until next week's episode, look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon PIANOPODCAST for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.